1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show. Open lines here to the end of the hour. 1-800-449-8686. Los Angeles, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Hello.
Oh, Phil, hello.
How are you?
I'm doing all right. I want to call and wish Pete Townsend a happy birthday, because today's the birthday.
For Pete Townsend?
For Pete Townsend. He's 55 years old today. He's a 55. Never thought he'd say that. You know, is old for him, is it?
That's old for Pete, yeah. 55. Well, what do you mean it's old for Pete? I'm 47, so...
Sorry, you're a bugger, too, all right?
Well, yeah, okay, I'm an old bugger.
Well, it's all right. I wish Pete Townsend a happy birthday, because he always said he hoped he'd die before he got old, and he's not died yet.
Right. Well, guess what? He didn't die before he got old, did he?
Yeah, he said that in a song. He lied. He lied that, right? He lied that, right?
He didn't lie, pal. He said, I hope I die before I get old, because in the song My Generation, he didn't want to be old. You know what? We all get old. But he said that. You're right.
He lied, right?
He didn't lie. He just didn't die. Hey, there you go. He didn't lie. He just didn't die. But anyway, happy birthday to Pete Townsend. Well, there's somebody we can talk about. Pete Townsend, who's 55 years old. Is that it?
Yeah, he's 55. He did all the great records of the 60s and 70s. Although I thought, you know...
What was your favorite Who song?
Well, I got my favorite Who album.
What was your favorite Who album?
My favorite Who album is Who's Next. That was like probably my favorite.
Who's Next? Okay, that was a good one.
I didn't like all the other rubbish. You know, I don't like Tommy or Quadrophenia.
Why not?
Because it was all gay. It was all too gay. And all like rock and roll, right? But all the gay, what he did Tommy, all did Quadrophenia, he strayed into the gay.
And what do you mean by that? You didn't like Tommy and Quadrophenia, why? Because it was gay?
Because it was all about orchestras and all potsy like that. Go out and get an orchestra and play all that potsy music. And no one like Pinball Wizard was rubbish.
Really?
That's right. Pinball Wizard, all rubbish. And only me. So I'll talk about this from some sort of experience, really, because I was a roadie for Foghat, and also was on a road with Blue Oyster Cult, but mostly with Foghat. And I was also on a road there briefly with Venom. So then I went.
Were you a roadie with all those bands?
I wrote Sound with Venom. And I worked on the road crew for Foghat.
For how long?
Oh, for 15 years I was out. And also, I'm very proud to say that I played on the road crew for Ozzy, who is the best rock and roll artist there ever was, for Ozzy Osbourne.
So you have been around with Ozzy Osbourne, Venom, Foghat, and Blue Oyster Cult. And in your opinion, Tommy and all that music sucked.
It's the worst rubbish that I've ever heard in my life.
What was it like being on the road with all those bands?
Oh, I barely made it through all those years on the road. It was all very tough. It's not.
What do you mean? Were you drinking?
Drinking and drugs, and I got pennied in my room one time. You know what I mean by pennied?
No. What is pennied in your room?
I'd been out all partying, and the road crew pennied me in my room, which meant that I could not get out, because they put pennies in a door jam. So that night, there was a fire. I could hear the fire going, and the fire engines came. This is in Austin, Texas, in a hotel in Austin, Texas, right?
And what band?
I was on the road with Foghat.
So the road crew had pennied you in, you couldn't get out of your room, and now the hotel's on fire.
Right, the hotel's on fire. So I go out outside the window, right? And I climbed down on the ledge, got over to another bedroom, another room where there's a woman in there. I went in, and I shagged her, and we had a drink, and she told me that her old man was coming back. I got out of the room, I went out in the front of the hotel. Now, no one believes that story, but that's a true story.
You went out of your room because the hotel was on fire, went through another bedroom window, had sex with the lady there, she gave you a drink, and you left.
That's right. And no one believes that story. That's a true story. It happened in May 1978 in Austin, Texas. And you can look it up. I kept...
Well, look up what? You had sex in a hotel room?
No. But you look up if Foghat was there or not. And I had all kinds of... Got a lot of quim then, though. A lot of quim on those trips. And also drank. Also shot heroin. And
oh, God.
It was great. I loved it.
You shot heroin and loved it?
I loved it. It was great. And
were you addicted?
No, never was. I was shot probably about $200 a day, and I never got addicted. I could never get addicted. As much as I tried...
Wait a minute. You're a roadie working for...
This is between gigs.
So what did you... Had you saved up money?
Right. I was not working for Foghat no more. I was going to go to a Blue Oyster Cult, but I was doing $200 of smack a day, trying to get addicted, but not...
Were you getting high?
Not really getting too high either, but it was a lot of fun. And
so what were you shooting this crap up for?
I wanted to get high. See? And
wait a minute. You're shooting up $200 a day of what?
Of smack. All my friends were junkies. I wanted to be like them. And
all your friends are junkies. You're shooting up $200 a day of smack, and you're not getting hooked?
Jimmy Page, he was a junkie. And also...
Wait, never mind who was a junkie. I want to know...
Eric Clapton was a junkie. And
forget about that. You're doing $200 a day of smack, and you're not getting hooked.
Almost, no. I never got hooked.
And you didn't get high?
No, not really.
Then why did you love it?
Because all my friends were. I could hang with my friends.
You could hang around with your friends doing smack, and they're getting loaded, and you're not?
Well, you don't understand the rock and roll lifestyle, see? It was all...
What do I got to understand about the rock and roll lifestyle to know that you're doing $200? What could have been shooting up? Anybody got an idea? What the hell was it?
I'll tell you, it was smack. It was...
It was white powder is what it was. It wasn't smack. $200 a day.
Well, that was in a day, so that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun shooting up $200 a day shooting nothing. That sounds like a blast, man.
You don't understand, because it was all a rock and roll lifestyle. It had nothing about it. All the people never understood us. We were in rock and roll. We drank Jack Daniels, and we drank took all kinds of... I smoked hashish, hash oil, also smoked opium. Now I look back and I think maybe I was shooting sugar and my buddy Robert was getting rich off of me when I shot that. You know, now I'm thinking about it.
What do you now you're thinking about it, having talked to me, that you were mainlining sugar.
That's right. It could have been that.
Yeah. Who were you paying the money to?
Robert.
You were paying it to Robert. $200 a day for...
A little baggie of white powder. And Robert would tell me that was junk.
And you'd shoot it up and not get high?
No.
Did you ever ask yourself, why am I not getting high?
I thought it took a while to take effect.
How long did you shoot heroin?
About a year.
It's going to take a year?
I was usually pretty pissed off now that you mentioned it. I was always pissed off. I said, Robert, this stuff is rubbish. It's not getting me high. He says it takes a year for it to take effect.
So for a solid year, you were giving your $200 to your friend Robert.
Right. Now I think about it, it's probably sugar, right?
Yeah. Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's got to be what it was.
One time it hurt real bad. I think it was 100% saccharin.
Probably what it was, pal.
Well, isn't that something? Don't I feel like the stupid asshole? Isn't that something? Well, that's what makes people life wonderful, though. All these experiences.
Jesus, if you're going to be a junkie, be a junkie. I always feel bad for you that you didn't get hooked.
Well, that's not right. You know, I saw a lot of people die. I saw a lot of friends of mine die from drinking and all the drugs.
Did you?
Yeah, a lot of friends. A friend of mine, as a matter of fact, got hit by a car as he was crossing the street. That was in New York City near Madison Square Garden. We were gigging that night. Foghat was there. Johnny Winter was there. 10 years after was there. Steve Miller Band.
And a friend of yours got hit by a car?
Yeah.
Had he been drinking?
No, he had not been drinking at all that day. No.
Well, he got hit by a car what?
He got hit by a car.
I thought you said you lost friends to alcohol.
Well, I said a lot of people drank. I said that they all drank. I didn't say that they all...
So the guy got hit by a car?
Yes.
And it had nothing to do with booze or alcohol?
No, he got hit by a car.
Where's he buried?
He's not dead. He got a broken leg.
Get out of here, for crying out loud. He ain't dead. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. We were just talking about the song Smoke on the Water and the fact that there was a fire referenced in that song. I remember I never was a Deep Purple fan till I got older and began having medical problems. And for some reason, you know, it's only until I had started having prostate problems that I really start loving Deep Purple. Although I did like Hush. But anyway, Smoke on the Water is about a fire that breaks out at a concert, I think. And in the song, they talk about Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention. And I saw Frank Zappa interviewed. I forget where it was. It might have been Tom Snyder. It might have been just a show. And he talked about a concert that he was at that the band was playing in Germany or Switzerland, where some nebbishy looking little German Red Army, counter-revolutionary, some, 70s SLA guy walks up to him and goes, "It's a nice night for a fire." And they set fire to something as a political statement of some kind. And then I made it into that song. And why am I talking about it? I don't know. Because Mike Schaefer brought it up, my music fan producer, who is also telling me all kinds of interesting anecdotal stuff about The Who. And today is the 55th anniversary of the birth of Pete Townsend. So he's 55 is what I'm trying to say. And he did say he'd never get old, but guess what he did? And this cover picture, they got him here on the Millennium CD that I have, the 20th Century Masters Millennium CD. This is before Keith Moon died. You know, Keith Moon, with all due respect, great man and, good drummer. When he died, how old was he? About 30-something? He looked like he was 50. This guy was not in good shape. 32. This picture of him here, man, he looks like he's about 50. So I don't know what he was smoking, doing. I don't know what, don't tell me. But I remember the first time that I saw The Who, and it was on a show called Alcohol was what he was doing. Thank you. That'll age you faster than anything. That's the only drug that'll kill you, man. Really kill you. Booze. Tequila especially. Thanks for that. Craig Taylor always with the good news. The first time I saw this band was on that TV show Shindig, which was an ABC show. And when they went back years later and said, let's get the videotapes out from that Shindig show, because what a groundbreaking, revolutionary show it was. Somebody said they were all bulk erased. They, seriously, if they had that show on tape, it'd be worth gold. Because every week they had these bands, and it was the height of the so-called British invasion. So in any given week in 1964, 65, when Shindig was on the air, you would see the Dave Clark Five, see the Kinks, see the Rolling Stones, you'd see Herman's Hermits, you'd see The Who, you'd see all these bands that were coming over here from there. And it was like nonstop, and not to mention the American bands, too. You know, Beach Boys were on, the Byrds later. Now, they had this gold mine of stuff. And the visionaries back then, probably some guy about 45 who was a union gig, they took the stuff and they bulk erased it all. They don't have that stuff anymore. And I would love to go back and check some of that stuff out, only because I'm a little bit of a historian when it comes to that, especially rock and roll and, like what I call good music. So anyway, make a long story short, there I am, a kid, I'm about 13 years old, and Marianne Faithfull had just gotten off stage, and I remember because she was singing there, she was singing a song. Marianne Faithfull was Mick Jagger's girlfriend. She was a blonde, she was cute, she sang goofy songs that didn't mean anything, but that didn't matter because the only reason you wanted to look at her was because she was good looking, and the guy playing guitar behind her, he was standing, and there was another guy playing bass, and there was a drummer, and she was sort of half reclining on the stage, and this guy is sitting there with tight pants, and you knew what he was thinking, him and the guy, at least that's what I thought when I was 13. Check out the bass player, man. He's got a heart on. Guy, he's in front of like 50 million people, like he's got time for that. So she's split, and on comes The Who, and I go, check out the bass player. He's got it. No, on comes The Who, and Keith Moon comes out. He's got a Bullseye t-shirt, and they were something else, man. They're very different. Very different, very loud, very nuts. The only other band that played that show that was equally insane were the Kinks, because Ray Davies had a brother, Dave Davies. He had his hair down to his shoulders at a period of time when it was still the Beatle cut. Nobody was really doing the shoulder thing. Here comes this guy, looks like Rasputin, the Mad Monk, and he's playing that guitar pre-metal, that you really got me kind of power chording it, and you're going, okay, this is good too. And the next thing you know, you're smoking a joint. So it went from there to drugs for me. And that's my Shindig story.
If you have any shindig stories, send them to Dick Clark Productions.
And then the show went off the air. They had a bunch of other ones. Hullabaloo was another one that was on NBC. It sucked. No, it was pretty good. It was all right. They had some... I don't even remember Hullabaloo. All I remember was a dopey name. England had Ready, Steady, Go, but I didn't see that because I lived in America, so that would be a little difficult. But then again, England had pirate radio stations like Radio London and stuff where you had to go off the... they literally had to go out like 50 miles to go to their jobs because they didn't allow rock and roll because it somehow was going to... And if, you know what? They're right. Because if you look at England today, it ain't half the toilet that this country is. Guess what? They didn't allow rock and roll in the 60s, and they don't allow no guns either. When is it going to let it smack us in the face? They didn't have rock and roll on the radio in the 60s, and there ain't no guns over there, and that country ain't half the cesspool this one is. Yeah, every now and again, some Scott, some Mick goes off the deep end and blasts up a pub. What's that got to do with anything? At least it's political and ain't psycho. I'd like to know if I get blown up in a freaking pub, it's for a political reason, not because some guy got out of bed and his curlers were on too tight. And they have their fist fight at soccer games. Hey, they care about sports. Not like us. We're leaving in the eighth inning. Much rather be in the middle of a soccer fist fight than have to have Sadie crawl over me because she's got to get home and get the babysitter back. Leave it in the third quarter. Forget about that. So they had that. They had the Radio London. They had all kinds of crap. So, and if you went and saw Quadrophenia, I went and saw it out in the West Side, and there were a whole bunch of limeys in the crowd. And as soon as that Radio London thing happens, you remember that kid is listening to his radio in his bedroom, Mike, and Radio London comes on. All these people went nuts. It was like the old days for them. It's pirate radio because they didn't allow this. This idea of pirate radio is simply get a boat, go out 3 miles, get a transmitter, hook it up, and let's go. I want to start my own pirate station out of my house. Why don't we do that? Taylor, you got the know-how, man. Where do we get the equipment? I can put it in my van. We can move it around. The sooner they triangulate the signal, we moved on someplace else. I got the call letters, too. KDIL, Dill Radio, Dildo. There actually was a Radio Dildo out of Phoenix. You guys in Tucson, you may recall back in the 70s, this is Radio Dill, Dildo, like a giant pickle from outer space. It was great. And they had IDs like, and now, ladies and gentlemen, much more music with Charles Manson. It was the best. It was the freaking best. These guys would make crank calls to pizza parlors. It was really awesome. And that station's off the air, naturally. Why not? I mean, you think something that good's going to stay on the radio? So, that was the pirate station. So, how do we go about doing that, man? And how do we go about not getting caught? That's the question. See, first of all, these new digital stations, there's going to be 100 million digital radio stations in America here in the next 10 years, which means everybody's on equal footing. Digital radio means you can pick up a station in San Luis Obispo with equal strength that you can pick up a New York station or an L.A. station. So, everybody's going to have their shot. And you can put a radio station on the air for nothing, which means more frequencies will be available. So now we'll really start seeing whether this crap's any good or not. And if you think it's competitive now, you ain't seen nothing yet. And guess what there won't be? There won't be an FCC. You know why? Because the guys who own these stations ain't going to put up with that crap. They won't put up with regulation. They ain't going to put up with no speech restriction. When you got 150 million radio stations competing against each other, the last thing you're going to do, no, you can't do that, and you can't do that, and you can't say this, and you can't say that. Are you kidding me, man? I got to make a couple of dollars here. So we're starting one out of my garage this Saturday, and Shirley Temple's going to be there. She'll start off with a song and Mickey Rooney, and we'll bring all of our old 45s, and it's just going to be great. And we'll bring back those glory days, those halcyon days of K-Dill. God, that was great stuff. You're listening to much more music with Charles Manson. It was beautiful. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show. Phil Henry Show. From the conservatives of Kern County, Larry Grover down from Bakersfield is in West Los Angeles this evening. Get a little update here on Rudy Giuliani leaving the New York Senate race. Hillary Clinton, it looks like she's, I don't know if she's going to run, and, you know, it's going to be an easy race to run because they got a new guy now. What's the guy's name? Rick something. But we want to talk to him about that, the Confederate flag, and George Bush asking for vice presidential candidates, Larry?
Yeah, Phil, that's the case. George W. Bush, let me back up a little bit and tell you that I think the conservative cause had a pretty bad day today. The Confederate flag came down in South Carolina, which we really had hoped a compromise could be worked out on. Now Rudy Giuliani is not running. Hillary Clinton is taking no prisoners. I got to tell you something. I'm really amazed with her. She's a bad day, and the Republican Party is starting to hemorrhage a little bit. We just don't have any leadership. Hillary Clinton, because of this castrating female in New York who's poised for a national race, Giuliani's wife left him. He has and I don't know if you've seen it, Mr. Giuliani, the mayor, is losing his hair, Phil.
Right.
And has taken to a comb over. You call it a comb over, right?
Yes, I do. Is he's combing over the three strands?
He's combing over the three strands of hair. And the reason why I bring it up, and I don't mean to be ridiculous, but here's a guy whose wife has left him. He's wearing a comb over, and the guy's got prostate cancer. I don't know. What I'm saying to you basically is this: you go up against Hillary Clinton, and you're going to get your sack sliced open, because she is a bad day waiting to happen for a lot of these Republicans. And I can tell you, I have never seen such a rotten day for the Republican Party. I hope she's proud of herself doing all this to poor Mr. Giuliani, who, as you know, has prostate cancer. And what we need to do, Phil, is give her a couple of flat tires on the road to the presidency.
Do you think she's going to run for president?
Oh, there's no doubt in my mind.
Why?
Well, look what she's doing. She's slashing and burning every step of the way. Nobody has a snowball's chance in hell who's going up against her. You have the great former mayor of New York. I say former mayor of New York. He's the mayor of New York, but we were hoping he would be a former mayor who goes up against Hillary Clinton, okay? Just follow the sequence of events, Phil, in the chronology.
Well, what you're saying is that Hillary Clinton...
Wait. What I'm saying is this. Giuliani declares, goes up against Hillary Clinton, prostate cancer, comb over, no wife, boom, boom, boom. Holy Jesus. Think about it. And this bitch on wheels has been...
Do you need to refer to her as that? Or
I really think it's important, Phil, because this bitch, you've heard the song, This Wheel's on Fire. This bitch on wheels on fire just keeps going and going. She's like some Energizer bunny that has a castrating machine. And I'll tell you something else. Hillary Clinton will be elected because Giuliani has prostate cancer. And as soon as he realized who he is running against, he developed all these problems. He got out of the race. You know, you go up against Hillary Clinton, you get ass cancer. Now, this young guy...
Ass cancer.
Well, it's a...
I mean that's ridiculous. Who's the... Mike, what's the name of the guy he's running against? Do you know, Larry?
I don't know. A young man from Long Island. I say young man. He's about 56 years old. Lazario or Lozano or Lasagna. He's an Italian. And if I were this young man, I would heartily recommend it, because he's going to go up against Helga, the sun god here. He's going up against this Medusa, and he's going to get his sack sliced clean.
Oh, man, would you please stop that?
Well, I'm just trying to get...
I got the whole message of who... And what and how, okay? It's just, boy, the images. You really think it's that bad?
I think I just gave you the chronology.
Okay, so Giuliani went up against her, prostate cancer, and...
No, it's quicker than that. Giuliani goes up against Hillary Clinton, prostate cancer, comb over, wife leaves him, goodbye. That quick.
All right, so what about... And by the way, I hope he's going to be okay.
Well, that's very gracious coming from a Democrat.
I'm a Democrat, but I hope the guy's going to be okay. I don't want the guy to get sick, and I would never wish that on any man who is patriotic enough to be involved in the political process in the first place. So I wish the mayor a speedy recovery. And
well, you're very gracious, Phil, but going up against this castrating bitch, it's probably all over for him. I don't see that he's going to...
I think that the man can survive?
No, I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, this is how scared I am of her.
I see. So the power of Hillary Clinton is reaching in to give this guy cancer, and it'll kill her.
The party may not survive her, the way she's going on.
Well, I think you're being melodramatic. Now what?
I'm not being melodramatic. What I'm trying to do is get a focus on the future on this thing. Now let me get over to George W. Bush.
What happened with him?
What happened? met with George W. Bush is the guy sent out a list. He sent out a letter to 450 people asking them for their advice on who his running mate should be, vice presidential running mate. We got a letter at conservatives of Kern County. A lot of interested conservative and Republican groups around the country got this letter.
Now, this letter was from George W. Bush asking, who do you guys think should be the vice president?
Correct. And he's looking for a short list, really, Phil. He's looking for maybe 10 names. And from that, he would make these contacts. But what we did is we went ahead and by the way, I got the name. It's Rick Lazio.
Rick Lazio.
Right. That guy won't have a nutsack in 6 months. It's gone. He's up against her. It's gone.
You're really afraid of her.
Yes, I am. Most Republicans should be. Because she's smart, because she's organized, because she's a very sympathetic candidate, and because we've lost Rudy Giuliani. And those are the main reasons that we are not going to have Hillary Clinton. We're going to be able to beat Hillary Clinton. And because she'll take our ball sack, slice it.
I got that already, okay? Now, what about your short list?
All right, the list we've got for vice president contains, I think, some imaginative people. Jack LaLanne is number, it's not number one. I'm going to give these in no apparent order, Phil.
You're going to give these are the lists for vice president for George Bush.
Right.
Jack LaLanne.
Jack LaLanne, because he is a known entity, he is a known name, he is an individual who's been in a lot of homes for a lot of years, he is a man who is strong, he's got a good image, he is a guy that is a very conservative, family-oriented, and health-oriented guy. People only see health, and they see good things, and they see strength, and they see progress when they see Jack LaLanne. We're looking for that.
Who else?
Charlton Heston, who's the president of the National Rifle Association, and a man who obviously has been very outspoken on conservative matters and who stands up for the conservative party. Our third, in no particular order, but the third name on our list would be Betty Ford, Phil.
And now, why Betty? Betty Ford, the former president's wife?
Yes. Betty Ford has lived through alcoholism and breast cancer. She's had an awful lot of bad problems. She obviously knows how to party. We're not looking for someone. But, you know, she can, I think, give a female point of view. Bill Clinton was smart about Hillary, by the way. He didn't let his penis within 10 feet of her, and that's why, you know, he met Monica Lewinsky. I just want to give you that one. Because
yeah, I see. Okay, so he still had...
He still got the ball sack. Now, Betty Ford. Then the next one will be Newt Gingrich, because he can carry the South. The next one will be Ken Starr, because Ken Starr has done so much for America in ferreting out the lies of this president. Ken Starr, I think, is...
Now, Ken Starr, I'm going to tell you something right now. You put him on a ticket with George Bush, and you will lose the race, because there's a lot of people that don't like that guy.
Well, you know something? They're going to start liking him, because he's a likable man, and we can make him likable. I think he is pleasant. I think he's affable. I think he has a lot going for him. Once you get past some things, and you know something, I don't give a. I'll take him. I'll take his name off. I mean, I just thought.
Yeah, I really think you ought to take his name off. Now, who's next?
Well, I just thought he'd be very good, Ken Starr.
No, he sucks.
Like, we're listening to you, okay? Screw it. I'm putting his name back on.
You're great. I think you're going to lose with him.
Great. Next name would be Henry Kissinger. Everyone knows who he is. Then the next name would be Henry Hyde, who was on the committee that tried to impeach the president, did some great work. The next name, Bryant Gumbel, who we think...
Now, why Bryant Gumbel as a vice presidential candidate?
That's right. We just think he's strong. We think that he is a guy that doesn't take any crap. He gets things done. He's done a lot of TV shows. No, and then Steve Garvey and then George Halas. So those are the ones...
George Halas is dead.
We understand that. And the reason why we like George Halas is because you don't have to be alive to be vice president. It's a symbolic position. And that is that
you don't have to be alive. The vice president has to be taking over in case the president.
No, it's basically a symbolic position. And
so we could elect George Halas vice president.
That's correct. We could elect. The other thing about Brian Gumbel, by the way, is the dark complexion. You can't get past the fact that that's going to help you with minority voters. But I wanted to.
Same thing about Steve Garvey.
Right. The same thing about Steve. What do you mean the same thing about Steve Garvey?
I was just kidding around. So who, George Halas, huh?
George Halas. Or Jesus Christ. Those two, only because you don't have to be alive.
To be vice president.
No.
Okay, well, good luck there, Larry, and good luck to the conservatives of Kern County.
We got this letter, and we are sending out copies, Phil, and we'd certainly like you to take a look at it and give us your input on that.
I will certainly be happy to do that, Larry. Thank you, and good luck.
Good luck. and thanks to all your listeners. And another thing.
Okay, 1-800-449. I had to cut him off because he was bombing. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show. Show. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com, for a taste of the best of the Phil Hendry Show, 1999 CD. And all the proceeds go to My Friend's Place. And My Friend's Place is a resource center for homeless and runaway kids in Hollywood. So they take that money, they turn it into, oh, extra medical counseling, job training, job counseling. They have computers, they have telephones. Kids can make phone calls. They're going to put a new, putting in a new center in Hollywood where the kids can come in and take a shower. Just, you know, to help these street kids turn their lives around. And that's what they do. And we love their work. And so we've been, you know, helping them out for a few years. $133,000. It looks like our CD sales have picked up a little bit. But I don't know. It could be my imagination. $134,000? Did you buy a few extra? More than the ones that I told you to buy this week? Okay, so it's about let's just say we're at $180 million and climbing. No, $134,000. We've raised $180 million. Thank you, America. Bullcrap. Well, thanks. Since December 14th, we'll never stop raising money. We'll just change the CD out from 99 to 2000. We'll just keep the campaign going. Okay, you'll be ordering up a CD, but now it's the year 2000. So 134. Thank you very much. Just saw Carl Bernstein. In fact, I'm looking at him on TV right now. This guy is about as old. What is it? Carl Bernstein, about 900 years old. A guy that he smoked out Nixon along with, if you'll pardon the expression, smoke, along with the other guy. What was his name? Woodward. And these two cats were the ones that, you know, did the deal. They did the Washington Post stuff that eventually got the Watergate thing rolling. And he was what, about 25, 30, 35 years old? He's about 160 now. And he's on Larry King, and he ain't looking too good. He was married to that Nora Ephron. And how do I know her name? Because my wife goes and sees every one of her movies. Sleepless in Seattle, You Got Mail, and what's that other one that Tom Hanks did? Come on, baby. There's got to be another one. There's another Hanks movie with Meg Ryan.
Big.
Saving Private Ryan. Starring Meg Ryan. That was it. Nora Ephron directed that. And my wife says, oh, Sleepless in Seattle. I know, it's a great thing. We've all heard the chick joke, you know, the jokes about chick movies. In fact, there's a pretty good one in Sleepless in Seattle. But I, you know, that ain't going to change anything, okay? All the jokes about chick movies aside, we still ain't going to go see no chick movies. And she went down and said, You Got Mail, and then she went and got the soundtrack to this thing. And if I hear one more Jimmy Durante song, I'm going to start bleeding. I mean, you know, rectally. It's just, make someone happy. And, you know, a lot of 50s stuff. And then there's the Sinead O'Connor, I Wish the Lord Was in New York City or something. Just, it's that kind of stuff. No wonder they're divorced. No offense. The movies are very nice. Honey, and I say this to you, I love you, you know. But you know what? If you ever start making movies like that, I'm throwing you at the front door, too. Notice I said just movies like that. If you start making some movies to make money, I mean, it's a whole different thing entirely, of course, my dear. But I'm not hanging around for no You Got Mail. And she went out and saw that thing while I was shooting some, actually playing craps with some guys one night. We have a crap game, regular. Most of you guys play poker. I got a regular crap game Wednesday nights. And we're over there, we're throwing some bones, and my wife went down by herself to see You Got Mail. And then bought the soundtrack. And now she never even talks about the movie. I said, do you like that movie, You Got Mail? What was that? The movie you went and saw, You Got Mail. Oh, that piece of crap. Well, you went out and got the soundtrack. Oh, yeah, I don't know what was wrong with me that night. Some, you know, it's don't tell me it's the hormones again. Yeah, I think so. Heavy flow, you know, I got a varicose vein, it's acting up, and I went and saw a whole bunch of Nora Ephron movies. Sorry, honey, I won't do it again. Thank you. So I ain't seen a, what's the movie you saw the last thing you saw? I ain't seen a movie in months, years. Art house crap, that's all we see now. I had to go see Swept Away for the 900th time. I'm going to see a whole lot of Liedem Wurtmuller movies. A whole lot of crap where it's subtitled with a bunch of Italians talking nonsense. That's what I'm looking at. But do I get to go and see just one good hardcore number like a Matrix or something like that? No! So I'm going out this weekend, and I think we're supposed to go see some movies this weekend. I think we're actually going to go up the street and actually watch a couple of flicks or something. And I'll tell you, one of the reasons I got that SAG card, right? Everything is for free if you got a SAG card. My wife says, we can go watch the movies for free, honey. You got a Screen Actors Guild card. I said, it's only good up to the Academy Awards. We got to pay like every other schmuck now. She's going to leave me for Nora Ephron.
Every day, just to drive to my baby. From 10 6 months each day,
Bill Henry.
Cause I drive.